Okay.
I thought it was my imagination.
Nope, it's down.
First, I got upset because I thought it was the this building right here.
The depot.
Yeah.
All right, I now call the Strategic Planning and Finance Committee of May 4th, 2011 to order. In attendance today, we have myself, Chairman Russ Huebner, Greg Blackwell, Janine Smalley, and David Robertson, and also Pervez Mohit. First thing we're going to do is take a vote on removing Alejandro Correa from the Strategic Planning and Finance Committee. In case y'all didn't know, Alejandro missed four meetings in a row towards the beginning of the year. The ordinance states if you miss three in a row, then that's grounds for removal. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to remove Alejandro Correa from Strategic Planning and Finance Committee.
I second.
All right. Motion made by Russ Huebner, seconded by Janine Smalley. All in favor? Yeah, sure.
Did he? I know you said you, for the last council meeting I attended, which was March.
Mm-hmm.
I think. you were trying to make contact with him. Did you ever?
Yeah, he finally emailed me, but he just said that he didn't know of the meetings. But I mean, we send the emails out to everybody, so.
Okay. Yeah, this right is an excuse.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
I was just wondering.
I just wanted,
you know.
Okay, so all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion passes 4-0. Next item on the agenda is to consider changes to the city's investment policy to comply with the approved debt management policy for the city of Kyle. Pervez, I'm going to go ahead and let you get started on this.
Okay. In your set of documents that I handed to you, there are two council resolutions. One is the current investment policy, which says 632, and it's all marked up. What I had done is, as I went through the old investment policy, I made my notes and my suggested changes. So I decided it'd be a lot easier if y'all could see side by side what I've made. So the red marked up is the current ordinance as I have made changes. And the other document, which is, it says on top on the right-hand corner, in preliminary draft, that's the cleaned up version of what I brought forward to this committee. So, Mr. Chairman, we can take page by page if you like, or I leave it up to your decision.
Yeah, I would say just hit the highlights on there.
Okay.
I have one quick question.
Yes, sir.
We're just supposed to be done every year, correct?
The state law requires that we update, council look at it, review it, and update each year.
Okay, well, that's what I was looking at, and that's what I thought. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure. Because this is dated 2008, so we're missing a couple
2009 of was not done, and then in 2010, the director of finance resigned, mm-hmm. and I came in late fall of 2010. And then we were finalizing the debt management policy, which affected this one, so.
Right.
And I had shared with this committee and council as well that after the debt management policy was adopted, we would then try to synchronize a debt management policy with the investment policy. So
okay.
Here we are, debt management policy.
I just wanted to make sure because I was like, are we missing one? Or
no, no. This is the last, most recent.
Okay, thank you.
But definitely needs to be looked at.
Mm. So, to start out with, the first page is the council resolution. I have revised that to incorporate in the findings section the compliance with the Texas Public Funds Investment Act. So it specifically states what the council's findings are now. So then if you flip to the next page, there's a lot of fillers in here I found that were unnecessary, redundant, so I took them all out. Actually, the policy doesn't, it's so brief now that you don't need table of contents. So on page one of the old policy, and page four on my revised document, because I'm counting from the very first page. Mm-hmm. The purpose and scope, I have combined and cleaned up the language where it's easy to follow, easy to understand. I have tried to eliminate some of the jargons that were buried embedded throughout this policy before. So anyone can pick it up and at least make sense out of what does it really mean. So basically in the purpose and scope is just clarifying what exactly the act requires, and in plain English, defining that scope. Then going down to investment objectives, there were a lot of verbiage that were unnecessary, redundant, so I took those out. You can see clearly where those clarifications are. But the main key points are still here. Preservation and safety of principle is a requirement of the act, state law. Diversification and the yield. Then on page 5 of the new policy, we talk about maturity. We don't want maturity to exceed more than 5 years, and that is pretty much the same what was in the old policy. We've kept that. And primary reason for that is liquidity for operating reasons, as well as the bond proceeds that are going to be used for capital assets. Because if we go beyond 5 years, we'll lose money in liquidating those investments. Item G, I don't know what they meant by quality and capability. I just struck that out. Investment management is basically what we mean by it. And then Roman numeral 3, investment strategy. I've been in the field of finance for a long, long time, and I really could not understand some of the language that was buried in here. I don't know if it was just the person that drafted it first, or they took parts and pieces from different cities and made one up. Mm-hmm. It just didn't flow, it didn't make any sense. If you look at the investment guidelines by fund type for current operating funds, I don't know what that means. I just didn't get it. So I simplified that throughout here. So we're basically talking about, in general, we're complying with the Act, the annual review of the city's investment policy. The council shall review the investment strategy. And within that investment strategy, these are the different types of funds that we are responsible for. So operating funds, what kinds of investments we should be looking at, bond funds, repair and replacement fund. We don't have one, but should council decide, these are the types of funds, investment strategies we should be able to use. Debt service funds, bond reserve funds. We don't have one, but should council decide that. And we do have a fiduciary fund. So these are different types of funds that the city has, and what kinds of investment instruments can we use. Then section 4 talks about authorized investments. This is the main bread and butter section that we are trying to match up with the debt management policy, because the debt management policy is very strict about what kinds of investment tools we can use. So guaranteed securities, CDs, and investment pools is basically all we can invest in. But in the old policy, we had lots of discussion, lots of jargon, and they also had some discussion on repurchase agreements, which we will not be doing at all.
Yeah.
So we took those out. Then Roman numeral 5, collateral requirements. In the old policy, it's on page 7.
It's page 12.
Yeah.
Page 12, page 7. You're comparing.
Yeah. Are you on the old
policy? On the old one, it's page 12, yeah.
And on the new one, it's page 7.
There's a lot of meat.
Right?
Carved out of there.
Yeah.
Actually, I was on page 7 on...
Yeah, if you look on page 7 on the bottom, number 4, it talks about collateral, collateralization.
Number 4?
Yeah, it's just number 4, not Roman numeral.
Page 7, it's number 4.
Oh, okay.
Oh!
I'm sorry.
I skipped right through that.
I was with you, actually. I got lost.
So in the old policy, collateralization was kind of embedded in the policy. State law requires very specific things about how you can collateralize. On the new policy, I created a new section, Roman numeral 5, on page 7 of 11.
Right, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
You
were,
yeah.
So I cleaned up this section, so now you can clearly see what the collateral requirements are.
Oh, okay.
For
so
CD.
Basically, you added this.
Yeah, I created a new section.
Gotcha. Okay.
Standalone section to clearly state what the policy should be. For CDs, these are the kinds of collaterals we're going to accept, for guaranteed securities, and then the responsibility for monitoring those collaterals. So all this from page 7 through...
Gone.
Yeah.
Collateral substitution. CDs.
Yeah, we picked that up in the new policy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of scattered, embedded, hidden. Then in the old policy, if you look on page 10, the old policy they marked up, top of the page it says investment advisors and broker dealers. That section in the new policy is a standalone section on page 8, Roman numeral 7. Safekeeping was kind of buried in the old policy. We have a separate section on safekeeping, how the city is going to protect its securities and where they will be held.
Out of curiosity, the investment committee you've marked out?
Yes. Let's see.
Consisting of the mayor, the city manager. It's on page 10.
Of the old one.
Yes, of the old one.
The reason being is, one, we got too many committees, and this was really not a formal committee of city manager, finance director, and the mayor. When it comes to investments, based on the new policy, we only have primarily two types of investments, other than the investment pool. So I don't think there's really a need for an informal committee to figure out where we're going to buy CDs and where we're going to have government-backed securities. So the broker-dealer basically is going to be based on what the city's RFP secures a firm. So that same firm is going to have the advisory capacity, is going to have the broker-dealer capacity. And most of our CDs will probably be bought through the local banks in the area, Broadway Bank, Wells Fargo Bank, Chase Bank, if we go in that direction.
Okay.
And then the investment pools are state-authorized investment pools. So I thought it was unnecessary to create another informal committee. If we need to, this is the committee we're going to bring back those items to for discussion.
That's what I was kind of like wondering, since we actually have this committee.
Right.
We really wouldn't need...
Get away from you.
Yeah, I have to keep an eye on
her. Yep. She's here.
So. We're here.
So on financial issues, we'll be working with Mayor Pro Tem to figure out if those items need to come here or not.
Okay.
And in 9 out of 10 cases, we will be bringing those here. So that's the reason I struck that out. And then I have a standalone section on Roman numeral 8 on page 9 of 11 on the new one. Investment authority and management requirements. That was really not clear in the old policy. It was kind of all over the place. Who is the investment officer for the city? It's the same as the director of finance. In the absence of the director of finance, the city manager shall serve as the interim investment officer. And then the duties of the investment officer, which is in section B, investment management. Who are the authorized personnel that can make investment decisions? And the old policy wasn't really very clear, so I made it very clear where you have to have two signatures, a director of finance or the city manager, and one of the following. So it will always be either the director of finance or the city manager, and either the mayor, assistant city manager, city secretary, or finance officer. In most instances, we won't probably go down that list. And I wanted to keep the finance officer as a last resort because we work together. We don't want that person to be signing alongside me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's either going to be me and or the city manager, and then one of these four. So on every investment decision, whether it's to withdraw funds, transfer funds, sell security, will be two signatures required.
So does that language need to be cleaned up then?
Yeah, I cleaned it up where it says, now if you look in the new policy.
Well, the way you said it was, it's usually going to be you and the city manager.
One of these.
I just misunderstood one of the statements you just said then.
In the old policy, it wasn't clear at all. Whoever could. So I wanted to make sure that at least one of the two and one of these four.
Okay. So I guess your statement of it would probably be you, the city manager, and then one of the other persons. It wouldn't be, y'all would both sign it, basically. Or no?
No.
It's just one or the other.
It would be two signatures.
Just, yeah. So, no, right. I'm with you. I'm just trying to understand your statement.
Yeah.
That's all. I understand the logic of the sentence.
In the old policy, if you look in the old policy, let me find that section. It's on page 11. On the bottom, number 6. To me, it wasn't very clear. And then even on the choices, it was kind of duplicate. The mayor was there, the city manager was there again.
Yeah.
The director of finance was there again.
Yeah. Right.
It's the
good
same
point,
people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I like that. That's good.
I do too. And that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yes. And then the training requirements, the quarterly reporting requirements to council on the last page. We're already doing that. Mm-hmm. Every quarter that I bring reports to, we talk about investments. We cover these topics. And then, of course, the annual audit requirement.
Well, it looks good, Pervez. Good work.
Yeah, so, really, you do an amazing job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So I would leave it up to the committee if y'all want to take time to review these side by side on your own and come back.
Yeah, I was thinking we might do that, and then maybe next meeting we can
finalize.
Yeah. Does that sound good to everybody, or do y'all want to take action, any motions?
No, that would be the motion.
There you go. No action. All right. Okay. All right, so we'll let you guys take this home, read it over. If you have any questions, we can do those at the next meeting. We'll move on to the next item. Consider and develop budget policy statement for fiscal year 2011 through 12, proposed city operating and capital budgets. So really the idea here on this action or this agenda item is for us as a committee to come up with our own budget policy statement for the city council. Whether or not the city council follows our recommendation is up to city council, but we can at least give city council some idea of what this committee thinks, basically a tax rate that we should be looking at and potential cuts or increases in funding on the budget. So this is probably not something we're going to come up with tonight, but I thought we could at least start doing a little bit of debate on this issue. Discuss a little bit, and then maybe at the next meeting. I'm thinking we don't really need to have a policy statement until after the election anyway, because any statement we issue now, if there's any change in city council, we'll just have to do it again, basically. So
And I hate to sound so ignorant, but when's the election again?
May 17th.
May 17th.
So it's not far.
Yeah, okay.
But maybe sometime next month we can actually finalize a budget policy statement that we can deliver to council. So that being said, I guess what I could do is kind of kick it off. You know what? Let's start off with you, Pervez, because you've got some information here that would probably be good for us. Yeah, here we go. City Council's budget policy directives. You want to kind of hit the highlights on this and make sure we have enough time for everyone to kind of talk about their opinion?
Certainly. Council adopted in their workshop on March 7th the following budget policy directive to staff in the development of the proposed budget for next fiscal year. For property tax, they basically said and voted on to that increase 2 to 3 cents for management operation rate component. For the debt service, it will adjust to whatever is needed. Utility rates, they directed staff to incorporate no increase in water and sewer rates for 2012. Transfer from the utility fund, we transfer funds from the utility to the general fund to cover the operating requirements. They directed staff to develop a plan to reduce over time the amount of transfer from the utility fund to the general fund. So we'll be working on a plan. For the new money that we would have in 2012, as the appraised value goes up and we add new properties to tax roll, any new money from property additions as well as increased sales tax, council gave us directive in terms of priority how to apply that. And basically in item number 4, they directed us to first look at those fixed costs that we have no control over, such as health insurance, fuel, liability insurance, step increases for the police officers, that's in their meet and confer agreement. For the retirement system contribution, we don't know what that number is going to be yet. And then provide funding for the new library, moving expenses, increase in their electricity, water, sewer rates. And then third, if any money is left, apply towards high priority items for the Public Works Department. And then lastly, if anything is left, for high priority items for the police department. Hmm. No new positions.
Left, yeah.
Yeah. They also directed under number 5, no new positions to be funded next year. And then number 6, FlexNet program is a system by which we automatically read meters on an hourly basis. And we basically recommended council and they supported the idea of putting that on hold and reprogramming that money. Number 7, municipal court costs will be reduced for appropriate funding level during the budget development process. 8, no new funding supported at this time for a new police station. There's been some discussion in the past about building a new police station or a facility.
That's terrible.
But they did they did direct us to use the $430,000 that has been set aside to renovate the bank building, which is behind the city hall, for the new headquarters.
Okay.
So the bank building is currently occupied by Hayes County.
Oh, sorry.
There's someone down there.
Yeah. It's under me.
I know.
Not anymore.
Just coming to give me.
Daddy's home.
Yeah.
She loves people.
And then lastly, council directed us to prepare a budget where there's no cost of living adjustment for City of Powell payroll. Those were the 9 major directives given to staff.
So, in a nutshell, expenses are going up and revenues aren't going up as fast as expenses. And a lot of that's due to all of the debt that we have as a city. Pervez, I know that you're looking at ways that we can refinance the bonds that we've got to either, you know, reduce the interest rate, extend the term, whatever we can to reduce the debt service
there.
That's
correct.
The other thing, too, that's important to point out is that obviously medical insurance of all kinds is going up. The police department is civil service, which means in a sense, they get to basically set their own pay raises that we have to follow. We get some negotiation there, but very, very little, really. But they obviously, they get a 4% raise this year, I think, and then it goes to 3% the year after that, and then it's 2% a year pretty much forever. So we are obligated to pay those increases in costs. What was the other big one, too?
Fuel costs.
Fuel costs.
Liability insurance.
Exactly. So all these things are increasing our expenses as a city. We did have an increase in sales tax revenues, though, of about $700,000, I think, is what it was.
For the next year?
Yeah.
We're projecting about $300,000 to $350,000.
Oh, $300,000 to $350,000. Okay.
Between property tax and sales tax, it was about $600,000.
Okay, there yeah. we go. Do you have any idea what these increasing costs are going to run the city next year?
No, we're still trying to compile that. It's very difficult to get any numbers out of Texas Municipal League, who's our insurance carrier, both for health and for liability. They're saying that it's going to be at least late June before we can get any firm numbers.
Well, that makes sense then. You know, obviously, too, the big thing or the one thing that's been a concern for me is the utility fund transfer. Right now, we're lucky that we're in a drought, if you want to call that lucky, but the city's finances are lucky because when there's a drought, people tend to use more water for watering their lawns, whatever the case may be. When that happens, they're spending more money on their water bill, which means there's more money in the utility fund, which means we can transfer that to the general fund to keep our property taxes down. But really, you're just paying for it in your water bill. I mean,
right.
six in one, half a dozen in the other, really.
The projection is that we're going to stay in a drought.
Problem is, if it starts raining, and we get a lot of rain for, say, 3 years straight, we may find our finances in horrible shape as a city, and we'll be forced to raise property taxes pretty significantly. Right now, we're transferring over $1 million a year.
$1.7 million
a year. When you consider our general fund is only $8.9 million and $1.7 million of that's coming from the utility fund, it's pretty out of whack. I'd like to work that down to where the transfer from the utility fund... Now, transferring funds from the utility fund to the general fund is not uncommon, and that's because typically, like, Prevez and the city manager, Lanny, have to take care of the books and manage the operations for the utility fund. So we can transfer money from those funds to pay their salaries, their benefits, whatever the case may be. But Lanny and Prevez are not making $1.7 million a year. So the transfer that we are moving right now is simply just to reduce our property tax rate. It's basically just being subsidized by your water bill. So the idea is that if we can get this utility fund transfer to something that's maybe a little more logical compared to the amount of time that Lanny and Prevez and the other city staff have to spend on that utility or utility fund, you know, we could reduce our water rates and then obviously hopefully somehow stabilize our property tax rate by reducing our debt. But all of this is going to take a lot of time to work out. It's not something we can just do overnight. One thing that concerns me is that City Council wants to raise the M&O rate by 2 to 3 cents. But that's actually a pretty big increase. 2 to 3 cents doesn't sound like much, but the M&O right now is only about 21 cents, I believe, Prevez?
Yeah, it's about half and half.
So yeah, you're looking at like a 15% increase in the maintenance and operations. Obviously, there's legitimate needs for that increase. Pretty much every department is understaffed. But for me, it's hard to justify such a large increase in the maintenance and operations of the city when we've got a lot of other issues.
What that relates to for each like homeowner, how much is that?
Like, you know, Prevez might be able to do that better.
Each cent or each penny will raise about 140,000 in round numbers.
140,000. No, I'm talking about for each homeowner.
Yeah. I'll have to calculate that.
I personally don't think it's that traumatic of an increase, and if it's for the betterment of the city and its citizens as a whole, I mean, that's just my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I mean, that's what we're here to discuss. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing either, but the thing that I worry about is basically when it comes to the maintenance and operations, once you raise that rate, it's extremely difficult to cut it back, almost impossible, because then you have to talk about laying people off. maybe getting rid of positions altogether. And that's never a fun or easy decision for the city council to make. I just want to make sure that I would like to get to a point where we can get enough actual commercial and retail development coming to the city to where we can increase our revenues without increasing the rate. And then when the revenues start to increase, use those increases to help out the maintenance and operations, you know, the general staff. But again, I mean, that's what we're here to kind of figure out what our policy is going to be.
I was surprised when I got my mail today, my estimate for taxes, mm-hmm. and it's flat. Mm-hmm. No changes. I was kind of expecting, you know, a little bit of a jump, especially when it shows the drop from previous. You know, it wouldn't have bothered me so much to pay a little extra to help cover this stuff. Mm-hmm. I think last time we figured it out, it only changed me where I'm paying $40 more a year. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, dinner at a semi-nice restaurant. That's it.
At a Chili's, maybe.
Is it semi-nice?
Right, yeah.
The latest information I had is that this rain that they were hoping was going to come in, they said if we didn't get any, that's probably going to be the end of it. Mm-hmm. And we were going to hit another heavy drought again, mm-hmm. which is beneficial to us, gives us a little bit more time. Mm-hmm.
Which is sad that we're hoping for droughts.
But see, during drought times now, the Edwards Aquifer District and the Barton Springs District will force us to go to stage two, stage mm-hmm. three. Mm-hmm. So it'll be mandatory watering days or restrictions.
Mm-hmm. Well, we already went to
stage one.
Yeah.
Well, basically, just to kind of wrap it up, what I would like to see is what the effect would be on the policy if we kept the tax rate where it is this year and carried the same tax rate over to next year, no increase or decrease. I believe that would mean cuts in the city budget. I think that there's areas in the city budget that we could cut quite a bit of money out of, which I could even go over those options with you. But again, I mean, I'd like to see what it would take for us to keep the tax rate flat without an increase or a decrease, what that would mean to the overall general fund, how much money we would have to cut out in order to keep the tax rate level. And then if we decide that it's going to be too much of a sacrifice, then we could take a look at maybe some areas where you know, we could consider, you know, increasing the budget for whichever departments we feel like in this committee are the most important to the city as a whole.
The thing that kind of concerns me is that they are projecting that by the summer the gas could be at $6 a gallon.
Right. Mm. It could be. And that's not going to help anyone either.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about the police department mm-hmm. and EMS. Right. And anyone knows what the fuel economy is on a fire mm-hmm. truck, taking it out one time.
Well, the police don't get very good gas mileage either.
No.
They rag those cars out. Anyway, I think for me, and this again is just me personally, and I want everyone to kind of get a chance to talk about this. The city is obviously in a situation where our rising debt service is forcing our tax rate up. Our utility fund transfer at some point is going to catch up with us. And our maintenance and operation, there's also a big push to increase that rate as well. You add into the fact that our county is going to have to raise taxes for all the debt that they've taken on. You also take a look at what's happening with the state. Obviously, they're cutting the heck out of the budget this year, but I don't know how much longer they're going to be able to keep cutting the budget like they have been. And then, of course, our federal government is also in an upward tax situation with all the debt they're taking on. So even though here in the city it may not seem much, if you take all the levels of government into consideration, we're looking at every single tax that you pay going up. So if there's anything that we could do here as a city of Kyle to at least alleviate some burden, again, in my opinion, at this level, at least we're not hitting everybody's pocketbook from every single level of government. But again, it may require a lot of sacrifices, and if we can try and at least figure out how much we'd have to cut out of the budget to keep the tax rate level, we can figure out what those sacrifices might need to be. Now, at the same time, if y'all feel like I'm totally heading off in the wrong direction on this, you know, let me know. But that's the direction I would like to start heading in.
I'd like to see if we can cut out the fat, so to speak, mm-hmm. first for...
What do you consider fat?
I need to look at the...
Well, I could tell you some ideas that I had. We spend a ton of money on travel as a city. I know that city staff likes the idea of going to these conferences and these professional development type conferences, whatever you want to call them. I think there is benefit there, but I think when you're in a situation that we find ourselves in, where mm-hmm. even though the stock market's not in a recession, there's definitely a jobs recession still going on out there. I think that we could at least cut out travel for a year or two across all departments.
Or at least limit it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many conferences are being attended.
Now, there are going to be some situations where people have to get some sort of certification or training in order to stay compliant with state law.
Right.
So we'll have to pay for those trips.
Right.
But otherwise, if it's just like a professional development conference, you know, let's just cut those out for the next couple of years. I mean, we'll be fine if you didn't pick up one or two tips when you went to Corpus Christi and cost the city $500 for one trip.
How much do you think all that travel...
I mean, each department has at least a couple of thousand dollars worth of travel budgeted, which that's not a ton, but, you know, it's a start.
Right.
And if we could cut out maybe $10,000 or $20,000 there. I know that the Chamber of Commerce, they've got quite a bit of extra funds. They get about $130,000 a year from the city each year. And they're still sitting on, I don't know how much they're sitting on, but they've got, I know, at least in the six-figure range of cash that they haven't spent. And I was thinking about approaching the leaders over at the Chamber of Commerce and asking them how long they may be able to go without receiving a donation from the city and see if they can start trying to get to the point where they can be self-funded and stand on their own legs without the taxpayer support. If we could cut that out, that would save us an entire penny on the tax rate right there.
Another suggestion, believe it or not, cities have a tendency of collecting junk and keeping it and paying for storage.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a couple of cities that had a city garage sale and literally was emptying out these warehouses and everything and selling them to the public. Of course, you know, anything like computers or something, they had to be wiped. But they brought in, I know one city brought in almost $120,000 some odd. And then they had that storage freed up. And they were renting it, and they didn't have that. And he said, so basically it saved them a ton of money there, too.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other option, too, is that we could just try and be fair and equitable to all departments instead of trying to, you know, precision cut bits out of the budget, is we could just say cut 5% across the board, every department, and let the department heads figure out how they want to do it. That way, you can't have any one department saying that police got to increase, but human resources got to decrease, and now they're all upset because they feel like there's, you know, priority giving to one department over another. And I'm not saying police or HR, but you're going to have situations like that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, every single department wants an increase in funding. I think anyone in a management position is always asking for more funding when they can get it, for the most part. But again, for me, the overall objective is not to cut the budget, it's just to keep the tax rate flat,
mm-hmm.
not going up, not going down, keep it flat where it is. But I think the first thing it's going to take is for us to try and get some numbers together to figure out what it's going to take to actually accomplish that goal.
I had a program that worked out really, really well. And basically, I told a couple of departments, all right, I gave them a task. They had to cut a certain percentage. And if they met that certain percentage, then we would have a certain percentage amount for like pay raises and this and that. It's kind of like a truck driver. Basically, in the old days, they'd go anywhere they wanted to get fuel. And so they get a fuel reimbursement if they actually went and shopped a little bit more and say, oh, this guy is a little cheaper, I'll go fill up there instead of there. And so they actually get a little bit of kickback from that money they actually save the company. And they save the company millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
In fuel, just by shopping a little bit better, and the trucker was actually rewarded a little bit of that money that they saved, they got back. And I've actually had a couple of departments that I needed to cut, and so we set up a percentage that we need this to be reduced by X amount of dollars. If you can do this and continue to do the job, then we can afford to have a little bit of a pay raise. And I put the money back, gave them kind of like an incentive. A reward program for saving money.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to suggest something like that, if they want to be able to have a pay raise for the workers, they need to find ways to be able to cut the expenditures down where we can't afford to do that. And believe it or not, that really works strong when you talk about putting money in your pocket. Mm-hmm. Can I save the city somehow on these expenditures? Well, maybe I'll duplex my paperwork instead of single sheeting it.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And yeah. it really, really is a good incentive.
I think that'd be great for the police department, too.
Yeah.
They probably do the most, they probably have the biggest fuel budget. Them and probably Public Works, those two.
And they fill up at one of the most expensive stations because I watch them do it. I'm going, go across the street. Are we bound to the station? Mm-hmm. Just stuff like that kind of puts in the back of their mind, save some money for the city, and it helps them get their increases.
Yeah. I think if we do a whole bunch of things like this, like what you're suggesting, cutting out the travel, you know, they're all small things, but you put them all together and they make a big difference. So.
If you're going to send, say if it's an important conference, you send someone who's very detailed, mm-hmm. take notes, bring it back and do a presentation here.
Yeah.
Instead of sending three or four people, send only one.
That's true. We've still got one more agenda item, so I kind of want to wrap it up on this item. It's definitely something for everyone to kind of go home and think about, you know, where do you stand as far as the tax rate goes for the city? Just to, again, reiterate, I would like to see us keep the tax rate where it is today, mm-hmm. pretty much for as long as we can possibly keep it there. Even if revenues go up and we could reduce taxes, I'd still like to keep them where they are and then use those additional revenues to start paying the debt down in the future if we get to that point. And that way, I think it also makes it easier for business owners and homeowners to have an idea of exactly what their tax bill is going to be year after year after year, and they don't get surprised by a huge increase or it drops dramatically, and then a couple of years later, it rises back up again dramatically. I think it's just easier for everyone to know that their home mortgage and their commercial loan payments are going to be pretty much the same.
No, I agree with that because I don't like getting a letter saying I got to adjust my escrow
because
of taxes. But more importantly is that I like to think even further ahead, mm-hmm. and we want that rainy day fund.
Right.
And we can't get to it, you know, if we start lowering taxes. So if we can keep mm-hmm. them flat mm-hmm. and pay our debt down, like you said, but then we'll finally get to the point where we'll have the rainy day fund.
And I'd love to get to a point where we can start putting some cash down on projects instead of doing 100% financing on every mm-hmm. single project. It's ridiculous. I mean, no one does 100% financing, and the people who did, they're all in foreclosure and bankruptcy right now. I mean, if we could at least put 20% down on future projects and only finance 80%, it'll go a long way to help us actually pick projects that are feasible for the city for the long run. Anyway, last agenda item, discuss financial planning requirements for creation of a municipal utility district within the City of Kyle's ETJ. Pervez, you want to get us kicked off on this item?
Sure. There is a proposal being considered by City Council to provide a consent agreement to a municipal utility, the creation of a MUD municipal utility district within Kyle's ETJ. I think they're called LaSalle mm-hmm. Municipal Utility District. When a MUD is created within a city's jurisdiction, it brings about certain conditions that the developer has to deliver, as well as on the city side, the city must deliver certain things as well. So the consent agreement has not been finalized yet. It's going to take a while to finalize, but I think the idea here was to start thinking about what kinds of restrictions or caps or limitations do you want to impose on this MUD as if it's being considered for creation. Do you want to place a cap on the debt? Do you want to place a cap on their tax rate? From what I gather from this financial planning requirements that we're talking about, those kinds of things to consider. So the my recommendation would be for definitely to consider a cap on the debt. That's one very important thing to have in a consent agreement. The second one is, if the city was to decide to annex this area prior to any debt being eliminated, that there be a post-annexation surcharge. So the residents within that MUD are still responsible for paying off that debt, not the rest of the City of Kyle residents. So from my perspective, and based on my experience in Austin with MUDs, those are very two critical items to include. And then there could be other things that y'all may want to consider.
So, help me understand a little bit of MUD.
What a MUD is?
Yeah, a MUD, they're basically... or.
It's almost
the,
like
the city finances the infrastructure or something.
No,
like that.
It's like a miniature city within the city of Kyle's extraterritorial jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So it's not within our city limits, but it's within our ETJ.
Right.
They basically have a boundary where if you build your home or your business, you're taxed at that municipal district's rate, not the city rate. Their rate is typically much higher than the city's rate. Because they're going in and they're getting financing for water, wastewater, roads, any other infrastructure improvements that they need. Typically, it's double the city's rate. Mm-hmm. So we're paying 42 cents. People in a MUD within our ETJ could probably expect to pay somewhere between 80 and 90 cents. The thing that gets tough is that these people think that they're City of Kyle citizens because they're so close to us. Mm-hmm. They want City of Kyle services, and we have to explain to them that they're not City of Kyle citizens, and they have to go basically to the county for their services, like police protection, fire. Of course, fire's got its own jurisdiction as well, but it wouldn't necessarily be Kyle police going and making calls in the ETJ. These are things we can negotiate with the MUD if we wanted to, but, you know, who knows if we can get that or not. But anyway,
it's a political subdivision created by state law where they have the powers to tax within that jurisdiction for infrastructure within that boundaries of that jurisdiction. And they're just like Mayor Pro Tem said, it's a mini city. They can raise taxes, they can put assessment on property, so they have all those powers. And the reason MUDs are created, basically what happens is within a city, in the ETJ, where they're so far away from the city's infrastructure for primarily for water, sewer, and roadways, that the city is going to take at least 10, 15 years to get there, but the developers are in a hurry to develop that property. And the only way they can do that is to finance. And the only way they can find financing is to issue bonds. And the only way you can issue bonds, tax-exempt bonds, is to create a MUD, a tax-exempt entity. So the rooftops pay the debt service on that bonds that they issue. The developer gets paid from the proceeds of those bonds. He's gone. The residents of the MUD are now managing that MUD. They elect their board members. They set their tax rates. And they usually pay that debt over 20, 30 years.
So that's the end result being that they get annexed by the city eventually, and then we get the property tax revenues. And
after what time elapsed?
It's not supposed to happen until the debt is paid off. But
which
if
is
we
20 years, do you say?
Right, but if we annex them beforehand, like Pervez was saying, is we can do a post-annexation surcharge on the debt, so that you and I, who don't live in the MUD, aren't having to pay for the debt that developed that MUD.
Okay.
So there's definitely some upside to it, and then there's some downside to it as well. It looks like the LaSalle development's not going to necessarily happen too quick.
Okay.
Let's see. The LaSalle development is down on Yarrington Road in South Kyle, and there is a ETJ dispute between us and San Marcos. And it turns out that most of that development is within the San Marcos ETJ, not Kyle's. And San Marcos doesn't want to give up their ETJ, so who knows what's going to happen with that one. But there's another one on the north side of Kyle. By Indian Paintbrush and Amberwood, that they're also looking to come to the city and basically just put up rooftops. So that one might happen, probably will happen sooner than later. But I think these are definitely things we need to do. Require a cap on the debt and then post-annexation surcharge in the land development or in the agreement with them.
Make it very clear that we will not annex this property or this MUD until 100% of the debt is paid off.
Put it all in there.
Because what normally happens is even with a post-annexation surcharge, now they have become residents of City of Kyle or whatever jurisdiction it is. Now you've got two classes of citizens. One that are paying a little less on property tax, and the others got because of their decisions in the past, they're paying the election. So then you have that rub, and then they come to council members that is double taxation, it's unfair, and so there's a lot of political pressure on the council to make that go away.
Yeah. Basically force it on the rest of the city. So has anyone ever lived in a mud here? No?
Is it, what, is Amberwood, or was
no.
it? No. It was always there, or it was always part of the city?
There are muds in Buda, a ton in Austin. And
the closest ones,
I can see the park, there's a bunch of them, aren't there?
There might be, yeah.
Closest ones to us are in Buda, and then y'all must have heard of Circle C muds. Or Circle C.
Circle C, yeah.
They have four muds within Circle C.
Really?
And City of Austin annexed all four of them.
Basically because of the pressure they were under by the residents in Circle C.
And it cost them dearly to do that.
So that is pretty much the meeting right there. I think we probably need to meet sooner than later again. I was thinking about just setting it for like the fourth Wednesday of every month going forward. If that might make it easier for everybody.
Sure.
You want a second?
I'm just trying to see what you guys think.
It works for me.
I'm trying to think what I've got. On the fourth Thursday, I usually have meetings.
You do?
Wait, you
but
said,
that's Thursday.
You said Wednesday.
Like
maybe right?
Wednesday, yeah. Yeah.
Probably be all right.
So May 25th, I'd like to meet again in 3 weeks, basically, May 25th. By then, we'll know who the new city council members are, if we have new ones. And I'd also like to, in that meeting, actually come up with a budget policy statement for us to deliver to City Council. And then the MUD issue we can work on at a later date. And then, of course, we can also come back and finalize the city's investment policy. Get those two things knocked out. I think that this MUD issue is probably going to be put on the back burner for a while. But I at least wanted to make sure that we brought it to your attention in this committee so that you guys are aware of it.
Mull it over, think about it.
You think we'd be able to actually come up with a statement about the budget in one...
Well, you know, if you guys have got a couple of weeks to kind of mull over it and come up with your own ideas, talk to your neighbors and see what they think. Hopefully we can at least come back here and have some sort of consensus, or at least get close to a consensus.
Now, I do want to caution y'all that if you want, you know, real numbers to work from, it'll be a little too early for us to do that. So just be mindful of that.
Okay.
I can share with y'all preliminary assessed valuation for City of Cal. I can share those with you. But in terms of what the department's final numbers are going to be looking like in terms of the proposed budget, is going to be a little early. Oh, speaking of which, I have in your packet a document that looks like the is the budget development timeline. It takes you from now until City Council adopts the budget.
Okay.
So it gives you the major steps in the budget development process as well, and then the key deadlines.
Okay.
So it's a good document to have, and you'll know all the major steps in the budget development process.
That's pretty much it, guys. It is just about 7:30, so I'm going to move to adjourn.
I second the motion.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say nay. We are adjourned.
Okay. So if we just...